We'll talk with a food psychologist this hour about new research on food rituals. This study says that performing rituals before eating something can make that something taste better. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 13th. The experiments found that simple rituals like tapping a soda can before opening it or scraping wooden chopsticks together before eating a stir fry enhanced the flavor of the food consumed. Even seemingly unrelated rituals like knocking on a table before eating a baby carrot helped us enjoy that carrot more. Do you have food rituals? Do you find that they make you enjoy your meals more? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Susan Elbers, a psychologist at the Cleveland Family Health Center. She specializes in eating issues, weight loss, body image concerns, and mindfulness. And she is the author of several books, including Eating Mindfully. And she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you know, I don't get it. Why do you suppose tapping a soda can before opening it or opening up an Oreo cookie and eating the middle first or some other food ritual would make that food taste better?
Boy, you know, I have a confession to make. I'm doing a food ritual right now as we speak, and probably many people are out there. I guess not a food ritual, but I'm drinking my coffee.
Right. That's
coffee
my
in the morning.
Yeah, that's my ritual first thing in the morning. And it does taste good.
It does. And sometimes it doesn't even matter if it's, you know, particularly good coffee, just that ritual of having coffee in the morning or whatever it may be, it's an important part of our day. We have lots of different rituals, and one of the things, particularly with food, that makes it more enjoyable, the rituals that we do, and we'll have lots of different examples today from your listeners, and I have many as well, is that it gets you involved in what you're doing. We eat mindlessly all day long. You know, we're just kind of popping food in our mouth. But when we eat in a ritualistic way, we're involved in the process.
Yeah, and it makes us, is there something to the fact that we are delaying the consumption even by a little bit that makes it taste better?
It does. So we're doing a sequence of events or a sequence of behaviors. This isn't just something that you're doing out of habit, but you have a particular way that you're eating it, and it makes you, you know, get involved, and it kicks off our senses in a different way. So, for example, I have a friend who every single morning pours the cereal in the bowl, puts some milk on, and taps down the cereal into the milk, and that kicks off some sensations. So you hear the tapping. As he's tapping down the cereal and the milk, and is a very specific way of eating the cereal. And when you don't do it in that way, you notice. And I would venture to say too, although they didn't do this in the study, that if we hook your mind or your brain up as you're doing these rituals, that there's some neural transmitters that are being elicited as you're doing these rituals because it's calming. It's a calming whenever we do any kind of rituals.
There was interesting
to add that to the study.
One of the experiments that was conducted was breaking up a group of people, and in one group, the participants were given a chocolate bar, and they were to break it in half, wrapper and all, and then unwrap separately the different halves and then eat the chocolate. The other group just ate the chocolate bar without breaking it in half and unwrapping each half separately. And the group that did the ritual enjoyed that chocolate more. They even said that they would pay more to buy that chocolate.
That's true, yes. And I've seen this happen in person as well. I have a client. I work with people who have all different kinds of eating issues. People are trying to lose weight. People have problematic eating. And she did her own version of this same study without even really knowing it. She would take Hershey Kisses and line them up and eat them one by one by one, unwrapping them very slowly, enjoying them. She'd line them up on her desk right underneath her computer. And so from the afternoon on, she would work very slowly through that line of Hershey Kisses. And it's interesting, it's fascinating that things like chocolate, if you eat it in a particular way, it does taste better. So this is a great tip for anybody who's out there who loves chocolate, you know, to try today, is to have your chocolate in a ritual way. As you said, what they did was, in this study, is they broke it in half and they unwrapped it in a particular way. They ate one half and then they ate the other half. And we don't think that these simple behavioral changes can make that much of a difference, but they do. So in my book, Eating Mindfully, I talk all about this, that we are working really hard to try and change the way that we eat, but we need to work, you know, smarter, not harder. We're trying diets and all of this different stuff, but really it's about the psychology of how you eat. And this study was a perfect example of that, that if we just change our habits and the way that we relate to food, maybe it's not changing all your food rituals, but really noticing the way in which you eat. Because I always say we can eat an entire plate of food and really not even taste one bite.
Right. And I can see how savoring that chocolate, and I've done that too, where I was actually at a function where we did a chocolate tasting, and it was, you know, to be where you would touch it, you would smell it, you would take your time with a small bite and savor, you know, the taste in your mouth and not just wolf it. And then it was more satisfying. You did savor it. You enjoyed it much more than you would if you just grabbed the candy bar out of the vending machine and you know, just wolfed it down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon just because you wanted something.
Absolutely. And it reminds me a little bit, if you've ever been to a wine tasting or you've watched a wine connoisseur, how they pick up the glass, swirl the glass around, take a little sniff of the aroma of wine, that there's a ritual and a process to it. My mother-in-law will swear that there's only one way to make grilled cheese. And she said you have to cut the grilled cheese on the diagonal with a spatula or it just does not taste the same. She will swear by that. And like I said, I'm sure that many people out there, they've got their own rituals that they do, and they don't even really know it. And I would encourage people today, you know, if they're listening, to start paying attention today what some of their food rituals are and what they enjoy. And another part of the study that was equally as fascinating is, so they were talking about chocolate. And I have many people, I do workshops in which I teach people how to eat more mindfully, and I use chocolate in my particular workshop. And so we eat it very slowly in this very ritualized way. I have people put it in their hand, actually look at the chocolate. Because so often we just pop it in our mouth. We don't even take a look at it. Opening up the chocolate very slowly and listening to the crinkle of the foil, which people never do. I mean, at the end of this exercise, people are very surprised about even the sensory component of listening to the foil being unwrapped. Bringing it up to their nose, smelling it. Literally, people will tell me 2 years later that they eat the chocolate in that same way. They'd never thought about that. They're usually thinking about the next piece of chocolate before they even finish the one that they have.
You know, but I can understand chocolate, but these researchers also did things like have the participants knock on a table, you know, just knock on a table before eating a baby carrot. And if they knocked on the table, the baby carrot tasted better.
Yeah, isn't that funny that it seems like an unrelated behavior to the eating, but just adding that ritual component to it made a significant difference. And I love that they added that piece of the study that wasn't just chocolate, eating that in a ritualistic way that made it taste better, like carrots, even carrots. So this is good news for everybody in that you can add this component to your healthy eating. Here's an example of one of my clients that in the afternoon, every day, you know, she added this component to her life of having an apple, but eating it in a very ritualized way. She took a paring knife and would peel it And she did it in this very particular way. One long string of the apple core, apple peeling, you know, around, and would take 5 minutes, same time of day, same chair, same place. And she said if she missed it, she just craved it. And you wouldn't think this with carrots and apple, but same thing happens. So if you want to build some new food rituals into your life with healthy food, I mean, it might just work.
Well, let's see if our listeners do have some food rituals or questions about building rituals into their meals. And we'll talk more with our guest, Susan Albers, a psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic Family Health Center, about how this research and rituals could promote healthier, more mindful eating. 1-800-642-1234. What are your rituals? What do you follow when you eat? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about ritual and food enjoyment during this hour with Susan Albers, who is a psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic Family Health Center, who specializes in eating issues, weight loss, body image concerns, and mindfulness. She is the author of several books, including Eating Mindfully. And we are talking about some new research, some new studies conducted by a team of marketing experts that found that rituals, like even knocking on a table before eating something, could enhance the taste of chocolate, lemonade, or even baby carrots. And we're welcoming your questions about these rituals and food enjoyment at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'd love to hear your rituals, food rituals. Kaylee in Madison is with us first. Hi, Kaylee.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I actually just wanted to share with you real quick. My fiance and I have had a ritual together ever since we started dating, which is about 2.5 years ago. We always will clink our forks together before we eat. And we definitely will notice it if one of us starts eating without clinking forks. It'll be like and then, you know. So that's something that we've always done, and it definitely enhances, you know, our meals together.
Well, that's nice. It's like toasting a glasses together.
Exactly. Yep.
I love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I love that one. That's a great one. And so do you do it in all contexts, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or is there a special meal that you clink the forks?
It's every meal. And actually, I was just thinking, and if we're eating something without silverware, like sandwiches or, you know, burgers or something, we'll actually take our sandwiches and cheer the sandwiches together.
Oh.
And it's every meal. It's kind of adorable.
Very cute. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's just the perfect example of how even if you don't do it, there's just longing for it. And we do that with rituals in our lives, but if they're not there, we notice.
Yeah, and the article in the New York Times points out that the ritual of putting birthday candles on a cake and lighting them and blowing them out, that makes that cake, you know, extra special and taste a whole lot better than, again, the if you just grabbed the piece of pie that was left over on the counter.
Yeah, and it's so true. Imagine having that birthday cake with the candles and everything, and just not singing happy birthday. It wouldn't even feel right. And when you start to think about it, this caller had a lovely example of a ritual, but we have so many of them that we don't even realize until we start.
Well, what are some that we might not? What are some that we might not even realize?
We have a lot from childhood, I think. I was recently at a wedding, and this wedding was held at a girls' camp. You know, we took over the camp, and it was amazing how all these people went back to. It was like going back to summer camp. being at this wedding. And as soon as these, you know, 40, 45-year-olds walked into the camp, all of these rituals came out that they hadn't done for, you know, 30, 35 years of things that they ate while they were at camp. So they had bug juice, you know, which is basically just Kool-Aid. But these people who, you know, in 30s, 40s, hadn't had bug juice for years were craving it. I mean, it's just all these rituals came out. And so you can imagine that a lot of our rituals start in childhood. Our parents are the ones who teach us many of them. So another example, another friend will only eat tuna fish sandwiches with a Dr. Pepper. And on quizzing him on this behavior, you know, why Dr. Pepper? What is it about Dr. Pepper? Had absolutely no answer except for that's what his mother did. And so, you know, sometimes they start in childhood, sometimes you develop them over time, sometimes they're in different contexts. Maybe you're at work and that's what everybody else does, but they're there.
That's that. Nancy emails, are all food rituals the same? Some seem more OCD than others. Mine was to eat apples by eating the skin off first and then gradually and evenly eating the rest of the apple by shaving it down with my teeth. Finally, I came to the core, no stem. It was more satisfying and I could savor the apple more. So mm-hmm. she's worried that might be a little obsessive compulsive.
Actually, she brings up a really good point in that any behavior that we have, that if you do it, you know, to the extreme or in, you know, very particular way, and you're not flexible with that behavior, can become OCD on that spectrum. And it sounds like for her, she's wondered about it. She has a particular method to her ritual. She eats it in a particular way. And I guess where I would draw the line for OCD is, one, with the flexibility. So can she eat this apple in other contexts? Maybe she's at work and can't engage in the entire ritual. Does that bother her? Does that stick with her, cause some anxiety? If it causes anxiety, yes, you're definitely on the OCD spectrum. And actually, with a lot of patients that I have that have eating disorders, they do become very rigid about the way that they eat and have very specific rituals. And if they don't do it, can become very upset. So absolutely, you have to be careful that if it is very specific, happens over and over again, and you can't change it, or, have any kind of variation in it, then it could be problematic. And the other definition I have of problematic behavior is it a problem in your life in some way? So I could imagine with her apple example is that, you know, maybe it becomes a problem to her spouse, you know, that you need to, you know, it takes up too much time or something to that effect. Otherwise, you know, it sounds like it's only important to her and makes her enjoy the apple better, so great.
Let's go next to Tim in Appleton. Hello, Tim.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
I was remembering a book that I read called The Kinavata Are Waiting For You. It's a book about an island of dreamers. At one point in their history, they had been very short of food, and someone dreamed that if they fed each other instead of feeding themselves, that there would be enough food to go around. So that was their ritual going forward, that they always fed each other. They never put food into their own mouths.
Interesting. Do you follow that, Tim?
I have never been that short of food, but I think that that's a good example.
Well, I guess
if we share, it'll be enough.
Yeah.
I was at the the wedding this weekend, and the bride and groom fed each other with the cake. I mean, that's another example of a ritual that we do at weddings. You know, so just, you know, obviously a different kind of version of it, but even the way that we feed each other, our kids, our spouses, not just in actually feeding them, but the way that we cook for them, the rituals that we engage in. I mean, this is a perfect example with kids, is that we teach them a lot of food rituals in terms of preparation of this is how you make a sandwich, or So, I mean, it's something that is in lots of different families, lots of different contexts, even in books.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of people also, the peel me a grape and feed me a grape, that kind of ritual too. Mm-hmm. Kim on Facebook says, my food cannot touch each other unless it goes together, such as ketchup and fries. If my ketchup were to touch anything else that I had on my plate, I couldn't eat it. I can't explain this either. What do you think?
Well, that may verge a little bit into the OCD category if you can't eat it. Again, there's that concept of being able to be flexible. But anybody who's listening out there, you know, would ask themselves, are they a mixer or not a mixer? And people have very strong feelings about whether they mix, you know, ketchup or put the ketchup on the fries, or are they on the side?
Right.
Are the fries on the side? Yeah.
And it seems to me that's something that young children do have an aversion to food touching each other, and they like to eat it separately. And that's something that might be learned too. I don't know.
I think kids have their taste buds in a lot of ways are much more sensitive than ours or as adults are. I mean, they can. Anybody with kids knows that you can try and hide something, a food in another food, and they will pick it out.
That's right.
They taste it. And I think it's because their taste buds have not been as corrupted with sugar, salt, all the things that adults have.
I got to jump in because we have a news break, and then we will continue talking with Susan Albers about ritual and food enjoyment. We are talking about rituals and food enjoyment. Do you have food rituals like eating a pizza New York style and folding it in half? Do you separate your Oreo cookies and eat the middle first, or do you have to dunk them into milk to really enjoy them? We are talking about a new study that says rituals such as these can enhance the flavor of what we eat. And we are talking with a psychologist who studies eating issues, who says that this research has some exciting possibilities. And we will continue talking with her and welcoming your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Tuesday, August 13th. Our guest is Susan Albers, a psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic Family Health Center. She specializes in eating issues, weight loss, body image concerns, and mindfulness. She is the author of several books, including Eating Mindfully. And just before our news break, Susan Albers, we were talking about our listener who said that she could not really eat food on her plate if it was touching each other. And we were talking about how kids have this habit. Many kids have this habit. And I meant to say that they grow out of it. And that's usually the case, isn't it?
They do. They grow out a lot of different behaviors. So if you have a really picky child and they have to have things just so, that is something that we traditionally see go away. We hold on to elements of it. You know, maybe they still don't want the ketchup on the fries. But as adults become more flexible, kids, you know, they'll only have a certain kind of chicken nugget. They'll only have a certain kind of hamburger. It can still be a hamburger, but they only want a specific one. And part of that is about familiarity, that we are creatures of convenience, comfort, but we like to know what's happening. And so part of what this study is suggesting is that we get a lot of comfort from knowing what's coming and what's coming next. And that's what rituals are about, is that there's no surprise to them. They happen in a very specific way, and that's pretty comforting.
Yeah. I just thought of one of the food rituals that I had. It's something that I did in my childhood. We rarely had French fries, and my dad would make them on Friday nights with a fish fry, which is pretty popular in Wisconsin. But we would never dip the fries in ketchup, and I still to this day never dip fries in ketchup. And the only time I'll dip my fry into anything is if it's tartar sauce at a fish fry. So that's one of my little rituals that I just I think it brings me comfort from when I was a kid.
Absolutely. And what do you think about the taste? If you put ketchup on, do you think you'd like it or just?
Oh, I think I have done it from time to time, but it's just not something that I crave. If I have a French fry, I don't have to have ketchup with it. I think I've done it before, and it's all right, but it's not something I do. But another thing about this research, though, that we wanted to talk about, while rituals that people perform before eating their own food made that food taste better, watching someone perform a ritual, that wasn't the same. That did not make our food taste better.
That's correct. And I thought this was a very important aspect of the study, is that just watching somebody else do the ritual doesn't do it for us. And in your example, if I were to watch you not put your fries in ketchup, it really wouldn't mean that much to me. You have to be involved in the ritual itself to get that perk or that bonus of the food actually tasting better. And how do we translate this into everyday life? Well, with kids, I think it's very important that if you are making food, to get them involved in cooking and involved in the rituals. So one ritual you may have is at lunchtime is making that peanut butter and jelly sandwich, having them put the peanut butter on the bread themselves, and maybe doing it in a fun, ritualized way. And lots of parents do this. They may make the little smiley face with the raisins or drizzle the honey in a certain way. But getting your kids involved in the preparation of food really early, I think, is very important, because we're so removed from a lot of the food that we eat. Think about going to a fast food restaurant. With kids these days, you just pick it up in a bag and off you go. And they're eating it, not really thinking about the consumption. They eat a lot of it out of habit. But when you bring those same kids home and you involve them in cooking, they do taste the food in a different way. They enjoy it so much more. And they will, they'll say, "I made this," and they're very proud and they're excited about what they eat. So if you have kids, make sure that you just try and get them involved. It doesn't have to be anything fancy cooking, but involved in the process of making food.
Well, we talked a little bit about this in our first half hour, but let's talk a little bit more on the implications of this research, that performing these rituals before eating can make the food taste better, can enhance that experience. You think that this really does have implications in terms of we can make broccoli and spinach and things like that taste better, perhaps things that we can eat healthier if we perform rituals.
Absolutely. I see it every day with the clients that I work with, and it's surprising. You wouldn't think that broccoli could taste any better, but there's lots of ways that you can eat healthy food to make it taste better. And this is fantastic news. We need to do more of this, to not just, change our diet. We try to do a lot of dieting, but that's not what research shows, is that doesn't help so much. We need to find psychological tricks and techniques that are easy, that are simple, to make our food taste better, to enjoy the food that we already eat every day and that we have. So today, I guess I would encourage people who are listening if you don't already have one around healthy food, to create one. And how you would create one is, pick a healthy food that you like. Maybe let's go back to that apple example. And add some aspect to it that makes it even more enjoyable. Maybe you cut that apple into six different pieces. Maybe it's that you have the apple at your desk in the afternoon at 3:00. There's a time aspect to it. Maybe it's that you have a certain kind of apple. You have a Granny Smith apple versus, a different, Gale apple. Whatever it may be, add some sort of ritual to a healthy food and keep doing it, day after day after day. It has to be something that you repeat. And I guarantee if you do it, repeat it several times, that it's going to be something that becomes a habit. It's not a habit, but part of your everyday life, and you're going to just enjoy it so much more.
Here's one of my bad rituals. In the morning, I do pour my bowl of cereal, and then I will bring it into my office at home, and I'll just munch on it while I'm checking email and Facebook at my home computer, and I'm just, you know, just wolfing it down, clicking away on the computer, and I'm probably not even tasting it. I should probably stop that. I should probably really just, you know, sit down at the table and enjoy that meal.
That's so true. I talk about that a lot in my book, Eating Mindfully, and of not multitasking when you eat. My motto is, when you eat, just eat. You know, push away the computer, sit in front of the table. And not only does ritual make food taste better, but eating it more mindfully. And what that means is paying attention. So tasting every bite, focusing on what you're doing, that your body responds different to food when you're paying attention. As you're saying, mindlessly popping food into your mouth or that cereal, you don't really enjoy the experience. And when we don't enjoy food, that's when we go back for seconds, because we want more. We want the pleasure. We want the taste. And that, I think that's a big part of why we overeat, is because we want the pleasure, we want the taste, but we're doing it in such a mindless manner. What's interesting about this study as well, they talk about the word ritual, which is different than a habit. A habit is something, and you mentioned it sounds like a habit. You go into your office, it's a habit you do every day. So you're not really aware of it. I mean, it's something, unless you focus on it, you pay attention to it, you don't even really realize that you do it. Ritual is something your mind has to be actively engaged in. You have to do it in a specific way, specific sequence. So I think that's what flips things over from a habit to a ritual, is that you're really engaged in it.
But I love
your idea of changing up that habit.
Yeah, another habit that I think I share with a lot of people is that I'll be in the kitchen, on the phone perhaps, talking to someone, and I'll be rifling through the cupboards and grabbing a handful of nuts and you know, just eating standing up, and just, you know, again, I'm not thinking about what I'm doing, and it is just a habit. I would make it a ritual if I would sit down to eat every time I do.
And it's so true. You would think that and that's not a very complicated one. We can all do that, is simply sit down while we eat. And if you pay attention to what you're doing today, you'd be amazed at how many times you're wandering around the kitchen, popping food in your mouth, or you're eating while you're talking on the phone, or eating in the car. I think it's probably one that many of us are guilty of, and it's hard not to do, and feeding your kids in the car. But think about what a mindless habit that sets up, that you're not even really paying attention to what you're doing. I've read some studies on eating in the car, and it's actually considered in certain studies more dangerous to eat in the car than actually to talk on a cell phone, because we're just not paying attention. We're drinking, eating, you know, putting ketchup on fries, all these things as we're in the car. So that's one behavior that I think is one that people can start thinking about, is sitting down at the table, even using a plate sometimes is a luxury in our fast food culture.
Let's go to Daniel in Minong. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. When children eating at our, especially at our grandparents, there was always a pause in which a short prayer, which thanked God for our daily bread, was said. Has the effect of that prayer, which many of us continue to even today, been studied?
Saying a prayer or grace before a meal, Susan Albers, is that a ritual?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is definitely a ritual for so many families. And what a wonderful ritual to take a pause before you eat. And as the listener was saying, is that that they continue to do that ritual. And I think it's important for many, many different reasons. It moves you into a much more mindful mindset as you sit down and you have some words of gratitude for the food that you eat. But it sounds like it's a ritual that everybody participates in together. So I think it joins everybody at the table and gets you ready for consuming food. And it's an important ritual that many people do.
We are talking about rituals and food rituals and mindful eating, and we are welcoming your examples. We're welcoming your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So do you eat your Oreos from the middle first? Do you rub your chopsticks together before you eat a stir fry? We are talking about recent research conducted by a team of marketing experts that found that rituals can enhance the taste of our food, from chocolate to lemonade to even carrots. We are talking about the power of ritual and our food enjoyment, and talking with a food psychologist who says that rituals could also promote healthier, more mindful eating. And we're welcoming your questions and your examples of mindful or food rituals, mindful eating or food rituals. Susan Elbers is with us. She is a psychologist, and she is the author of several books, including Eating Mindfully. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mary in Partyville is with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Beautiful day.
Good.
I just want to mention about my ritualistic coffee in the morning. Instead of having one big cup of coffee, I make it last longer by having two little cups. I use small cups, and it feels like I'm drinking more coffee.
Yeah, you're getting two cups instead of one. I love that. And Susan Elbers, you think that this is important with portion control, don't you?
I do. I love that example. And because it's an example of how we do little almost experiments or little mind tricks on ourselves, having two cups instead of one, even though it's likely to be the same amount. And you can do the same with the food that you eat. Break down your snack into put it onto two plates instead of one. You'll feel like you have a lot. You're eating a lot more.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that idea, Mary. We have an email from Saul who says, "I think playing around with people's eating habits is full of unforeseen consequences. There was a classic study at Michigan State, I believe, that showed that normal, healthy young men could be induced to become anorexic in as little as 6 weeks. More importantly, 2/3 of them still showed signs of eating disorders a year after the study was stopped." Are you familiar with this, or a comment on Saul's concerns?
Yeah. I believe what he's referring to is there's some very classic studies, I think they're from the 60s, that they did. They were called the starvation studies. I assume that this is what he's referring to. And what's different about the studies, and I think what we're talking about, is that they took their food away. I mean, they gave them very little food to eat. And what they did find that relates to what we're talking about, though, is that when they were reintroduced to food, or they had, when they did give the subjects food, they gave them, very little, but they still gave them food. They had rituals that the people in the study developed, because they were trying to savor it and make what they had last. So very, very interesting studies, but from a long time ago. And I don't think how it relates to what we're talking to as well is that I don't think that we should cut out all of our good foods. I mean, I don't believe in dieting. I think that we need to start eating the foods that we love in a much more mindful way, and we'll enjoy it more and consequently eat less.
We'll talk a little bit more about mindfulness with Paula in La Crosse. Hi, Paula.
Hello. I'm a registered dietitian, and I so wholeheartedly agree with the mindfulness, and I hope it just is promoting just a better, healthy relationship with food. Exactly as your guest just said, we've created this terrible diet mentality in America, and it's an unhealthy relationship with food, and can't eat this, can't eat that, and all food in moderation is good, and how our body needs healthy, good food.
Susan Albers?
Absolutely. I second everything that you're saying. I think That's so true, that we get into this diet mentality and have all these mixed, warped messages about you can't eat bread, you can't eat sugar, all of these things. But when you learn how to eat in a more mindful way, you can have a wide range of the foods that you naturally love. And that's what I particularly love about the theory. It doesn't matter if you're vegetarian, you love meat, you know, whatever it is, you can apply the principles of mindful eating to the way that you naturally eat.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about some of these mindful eating steps, like sitting down to eat. Let's talk about a few more. You have a chart that we actually put on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and we pulled a few from this. Put your fork down in between bites to slow yourself down.
Yes, and here's a really sneaky one that's pretty easy that people can try today. There's a study that looked at eating with your non-dominant hand. So I'm right-handed eating with my left hand. And what they find is that can slow you down by and reduce how much you eat by 30%, because it stops that automatic hand-to-mouth flow that we all have. Because when you put it in your other hand, you really have to think about what you're doing. It kind of feels funny.
Yeah, I'm just trying that right now with my left hand bringing my pen up to my mouth, and you it does make you think. Yeah.
Yeah. In my book, Eating Mindfully, I have lots of really little easy tips like this, because it can't be hard. If we can't do, you know, epic things with our eating. We need simple, easy. We're busy people, and that's an example of just a little trick that you can do. Another one with your fork is that in America, we scoop with our fork. And if you've ever been to European countries, a lot of times they pierce with their fork. They turn it upside down and pierce with it. It's another easy thing that you can do to try to break up some mindless eating today.
Here's one that I think sounds really good. Eat your favorite food last. Why?
Mm-hmm. And there was a study that looked at if you ate your favorite food first or last, and eating it last helps you to enjoy it more and eat less later. And it has to do with your memory, that we have very short-term memories. Many of us, our minds are so packed and stuffed. So eating your favorite food last will keep it fresher in your mind, and then you'll eat less later.
So we have just a minute to go. What would you like to leave our listeners with in terms of mindful eating and ritual?
Well, yeah, there's so much I would love to say, but notice today. Look at your eating habits. Notice if you have any rituals that you do, and try and make them healthier if you can. I have lots of tips on my website, which is eatingmindfully.com. And, I hope people that I would just wish them to eat, drink, and be mindful. Enjoy the food that you have.
Will do. Enjoy that coffee, Susan.
Thank you, too.
Susan Albers is a psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic Family Health Center who specializes in eating issues. She is the author of several books, including Eating Mindfully. Thank you to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Justin Williams for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We're going to be talking about some criminal justice issues coming up in our next hour, including mandatory minimum sentencing and stop and frisk in New York. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.